Robert, as per usual, I will just read the following out to you. I welcome you all here to the meeting today. I would remind members of the public to remain seated throughout the meeting and that they should not speak. I would ask everyone to ensure that their mobile phones are either off or switched on to silent, and you are all aware that, of course, the proceedings is not allowed to be recorded on any mobile devices. I would also remind everyone that the proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded, except where the council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment, as you know, is linked to the microphone system, so please ensure that your microphone is switched on before speaking. And members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments that they make at the meeting. I also remind councillors of their obligation under the Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the meeting today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on the item and should not take part in the vote. Andy, do you want... Are you lights red, Andy?
It is, yeah. Thank you, Chair. I need to declare an interest in the motion from Councillor Turner regarding the closure of Arnold Bannon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Henry, do you want to declare an interest?
Yeah, I just would like to say I watch Mrs. Brown's Boys, and they've been involved in some serious tax avoidance.
It's all right. You don't need to confess that here tonight, Henry. Okay, folks. Just come on, we have quite a heavy schedule tonight and we'll carry on with the meeting. Just from everybody just settling down, Councillor Burgess. Robert. Okay, folks, first and foremost, I know that we had a young man from Terry's area who lost his life earlier on in the week, and I pass my condolences on to the family of Bob Hurty. I am aware that we have a number of apologies from councillors, and a couple of our councillors are not here because of their own personal circumstances, both their own health and other family issues. I'm not going to be more specific than that, other to say that this council sends their best wishes to all councillors who are not here because of their own circumstances. So I send my good wishes to all councillors that are absent. We also have an apology tonight from Stephen Burns, who is running late. Apparently there is some sort of a security scare in Belfast and he has been delayed. Other than that, have we any apologies from any councillors that we want to record? Okay.
Councillor Brown.
Okay. The only other thing that I would like to say, this has been an exceptional month, I think, for the council. We actually had our first of our health meetings with the Southern Trust, Southeastern Trust, Ambulance Trust and Public Health Agency. I think everybody, both the members of the Trust and the councillors involved, have said that it was quite possibly the best and most constructive meeting. If not, we didn't hear everything that we wanted to hear, perhaps, but it was certainly an extremely constructive meeting and very well received by everyone. The Halloween events that have taken place over the district, from the Variety Market in Newry on the Friday right through to Newcastle on Tuesday, had phenomenal attendance at all events. They were absolutely superb, and I congratulate the events team for all their hard work. And the final comment I would make is the opening of the new leisure centre in Newry. I spent a fair bit of time there on Friday, Saturday and Sunday. I spoke at length to a number of athletes that had turned up to put on show matches and what have you. The basketball, the wheelchair basketball teams that had come from right across the whole island were just completely blown away with the facilities that we have in our new leisure complex. They said that it is certainly the best in the whole island of Ireland, and that went from right across the board from everybody. So again, I think it is something to be very much welcomed within the district. Okay. Gary.
Yeah, and Chair, just to totally agree with you on the new legislature, Chair. I absolutely think it's fantastic, and the feedback we're getting is brilliant. But a few people on to me today, Chair, trying to ring through on the phone, trying to book sessions and that sort of thing. So I appreciate the 30 days. Maybe just look into that, Chair, and because I say it would create a huge anticipation, so let's make sure we follow through on that. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, and just before we start the meeting properly, I would just remind councillors that at each item, I would be grateful if they come in once and once only, so we're not ping-ponging all over the place. Okay, we will go on then to Councillor Kinley.
Yes, Chair. Just wanted to ask you about something you referred to there, about the visit of the health trust, Chair. Mm-hmm. Now, I had to leave that meeting early, so I'm not sure whether it was addressed or not. But pre that meeting, my clear recollection was that the written responses were to be received in advance of the meeting. Is there any reason why that wasn't the case, and will that be rectified going forward? Thanks, Chair.
Chairman, it was never agreed the written responses would be circulated in advance. The written responses would enable us to put together a report in terms of the issues so that members could raise the issues at the meeting. The Trust agreed that they would actually address each of the written responses, conscious that really they only got the detailed responses, and indeed some of them was quite detailed. They have responded to them individually, and indeed I think all bar the ambulance service, we circulated the written responses to all members this morning when we got the first of them in, and we're certainly on the ambulance service one when it comes in. But again, they got them only 10 days. Again, you're conscious of the first meeting, so we were very tight for time to ensure that all the people were invited to the workshop.
Yeah. And my recollection of it was that we had asked that they would respond in writing, but it would be after the meeting, not beforehand. And that has come through. Okay, Councillor Barnes?
Yeah, just on that point, Chair. If Councillor Kennedy wants to make a proposal, I think it actually makes sense for the next meeting that we do have the responses beforehand. We convene our meeting 6 weeks before, and I think it was Shane from the NIAS that said they got our questions the week before. So if we're meeting 6 weeks before, it's taking us 5 weeks to write up the questions and send to them. We need to sort that out. It actually means that if we're coming in, although I have to compliment Willie on the night, I thought he was excellent at letting us back in and out for making questions or putting more questions to them. But if we had the responses beforehand, we'd be able to formulate questions on the back of that, and it wouldn't drag on as long, going back and forth. So I think it's actually, just for the, if you're having meetings going forward, I think it makes it more efficient if we have the responses beforehand. So if it's something that, Councillor Tenney wants to propose, I'll second it.
Councillors, this actually isn't on the agenda tonight. That's the first thing. Secondly, this was the first meeting. The whole point of the way the meeting was set up was that it would be those that were taking part in the working groups, the service users, the service providers and the lobbyists that would have control of the agenda. It's certainly something that we can look into as we move forward. But this is actually Chairperson's remarks. We haven't even started the meeting yet. So can we start the meeting? Okay. Do you want to
Chairman? Yeah. Chairman. Again, just in terms of, I'm happy. The problem was that really, if you remember, that we agreed at the first meeting. We weren't at the first meeting in before the end of October. So the idea was to have the first meeting. That left us only 8 weeks. So for us to recruit the people onto the workshop, to get the workshop to happen, to write up the papers, it was a very tight timescale. But now that we've got 6 months to the next meeting, which is now scheduled at the end of April, we can try and have the workshop in February, which will give us enough time to write out to the Trust. But I think the Trust, I don't want the Trust being blamed for this year. It was really in terms of trying to get the thing expedited to make it happen. But yes, I think there's no problem. We write out to get the responses before we have our meeting in future.
Sure, you had left the meeting, and that was the question I raised about them, and I did remark that they'd only a week, and they agreed that, yes, I think in the future that they would have the real questions, they would have the answers to us, as long as they got them in time. So I don't think there's an issue now, hopefully.
No, I don't believe there is an issue, but can we move on now with the meeting, because as I say, that was Chairperson's remarks. Okay, so we actually have the action sheet from the minutes of the meeting held on the 2nd of October. Has everybody had an opportunity to have a look? Liam, do you want to make any comment?
Chairman, most of the work has been actioned or is in the process of being actioned. I think one of the ones, the draft responses to the trust, has been done and reflected in that. I think the rest of stuff is underway. I get the action sheet updated for the next meeting, Chairman. Anything that hasn't been done as action will be taken forward to the next meeting.
Okay.
Chair, on that, just on page 3 of it, in the paragraph, action progress date, we've got inaccuracy there. It says that the customer service for delivery of the new bin could be delivered within 7 days. That isn't accurate. Could be 7 weeks or seven months, hopefully. But that needs to be looked at because there's not enough staff, it seems, at the moment. I was inquiring in different areas that requested brown bins, and they've been promised them weeks and weeks ago, and there's no sign of it yet. See, people are off sick, and there's no staff, and everything. So that needs to be a change, or else transfers that need to be recruited.
Okay.
Thank you. Could you take that on board, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, Councillor Devlin.
Thank you, Chair. My query relates to the same page that Becca was referring to, page 3 of the action sheet, the bin collection in the Down District. And the link is now working on the website, but it only goes up as far as September 17. Can we get the calendar updated for the forthcoming year with the days for the bin collection, please?
Follow up on that, Chairman.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It's just on the same point as Devlin. I have a constituent in the Drummond S area has requested a bin several weeks ago. And it's really a question, will she have to request it again or will it come at some stage?
But Chairman, if you give us the details, we'll follow up to make sure to check that it will come out.
If any councillors have any issues with their bins, if they give the details at the end of the meeting, and we'll endeavour to make sure that they are properly followed. Okay, item 4. The minutes of the council meeting held on the 2nd of October. We will go through it page by page for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And 9. Are we all right for accuracy? And proposer and seconder, please. Proposed Councillor Burgess, can we have a seconder for the minutes of the meeting? Councillor Hershey. Matters arising. Okay. We'll move on to item 5. The minutes from the special council meeting held on the 25th of September, and again we'll go through them page by page for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, and page 5. Can we have a proposer and seconder? Councillor Hurty, Councillor Burgess, proposed and seconded. Councillor McAteer.
Could I just highlight just a wee slight, not anything to do with the accuracy of this, but there's a slight deficit in the sense in the information, because I think formerly we would have had maybe some recourse to discussions that we had, DA discussions or individual discussions with the Transport MI folk. If you look through these minutes here, the people that came that night have a record of actually what was said, and you know, a feedback. There's an element there of feedback. But when we met them individually in Monaghan Row, other than the Transport MI people taking a record of what was discussed, you know, there isn't a lot of record. You know, I'm just thinking that whole day, nearly to a certain degree, would possibly needed a minute, because people come along here, they weren't able to go in the morning. They have all their items minuted, and sort of anybody else that doesn't.
Okay.
Sorry, is this one here? This one here, is it?
Yeah. Do you want to turn your light off there?
Sorry,
please. Declan, please. Councillor. Okay, we'll take that point then for the rules. Councillor Enright.
Well, to make the same point, I actually did request a set of minutes, and it came back with issues we'd raised not included.
and I wrote back to them and asking for those items to be included and to seek a response from them, and I don't think I had an answer back yet, so I'm basically agreeing with that.
Chairman, the meetings of the DEA meetings are DEA meetings for councillors to raise with officials from the various statutory bodies. You know, it's an issue we can write out in terms of picking up action sheets, but we don't do the minute of the meetings. The DEA meetings are enough potential engagement for you to bring on. Again, you know, there is a big number of DEAs, a major resource implication for ourselves and out there. So just to raise that, Chairman.
We will move on to item.
Sorry, Chair. For the Mourne DA, when we're meeting with the road service, Mourne's is split across the two road service departments. Are we going to simplify it for
this
the
Mourne? This isn't to do with road service, this is housing executive. Declan, you've started it now. Okay, we'll move on then to item 6, which is the minutes from the ERT committee held on the 9th of October. Again, we'll go through it page by page for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and page 10. Proposer and seconder for accuracy, Councillor Harvey, Councillor Burgess. Proposed and second. Matters arising, Councillor Savage, you have indicated.
Well, there's an element of accuracy as well, Chair. It's in relation to page 7, in relation to the Brexit verbal report. And, Chair, I thank the committee for giving me an opportunity to address them in relation to the Brexit issue. Chair, it's just in relation to what we've actually agreed. The proposal I had made was in relation to a manufacturing and business task force, and I see it's been recorded as an advisory group. And I'm just concerned that we end up with a watered-down version of what we'd actually agreed to at the full council meeting in relation to taking up the challenges that we faced, and I'd be concerned that we would lose the impact of what we were trying to achieve in relation to scoping out the opportunities to attract businesses to the Greater Newry city area and district in relation to attracting jobs from the manufacturing sector that we're looking to find subdivisions in the UK market. In relation to that, I'd also like to ask what progress, if any, has been made so far in trying to set up that task force, Chair.
Chair, there's no issue with the amendment to the minute. On that, I do recall a task force being mentioned and proposed and seconded. The minutes of this committee are only being adopted tonight by Council. We have an economic forum scheduled for Wednesday morning, and it's our intention to raise it at the economic forum with the businesses just regarding the establishment of that. We've also pulled together a significant list of manufacturing businesses in our area who we can make contact with after this meeting just regarding a potential task force.
Okay, councillors, just on the item of Brexit, I'm not sure if all of you councillors have managed to get your hands on one of these documents. Caroline has some here, and we would be quite keen that everybody would have one. There was a substantial amount of work put in by, and indeed if any of the press wanted it, there's you know, a substantial amount of work. They are here with Caroline.
Chair, just on one item on the ERT committee on page 10, this came out late. It was sort of pushed through on the day, so it wasn't. I do honestly believe that there is concerns that needs to be dealt with. I believe the officer and...
Sorry, Councillor Hannah, that was an in-committee item. It was taken in closed session. If you want to wait to the end of the meeting, then we can take it in closed session again if you want to discuss it further.
That's
Is that okay?
That's all right.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Thanks, Chair. It's just on that Brexit verbal report and the choice of words that Michael just used there. As someone who may well be appointed to that advisory group there, I object to being described as watery, Chair.
item 7, the minutes from the SP&R committee meeting, which was held on the 12th of October. Again, Doreena's joining us, and we will go through it page by page for accuracy. Okay, Doreena. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, if I can open the page, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Proposer and seconder for accuracy, Councillor Burgess, seconder, Councillor Dorn or Councillor Hardy. And Councillor Riley, you have indicated you want to speak.
Yeah, it was just on the regulating the lease of foreshore for Newry and Mourne. I'm sure you're aware, Madam Chair, of the collapse of a section of the...
What item is it, Henry, just so we can locate it quickly?
It's on page 6. Regulating lease of foreshore for Newry and Mourne.
That's okay.
I would just like to point out that there's been a collapse there of the Mourne Esplanade footpath, the cliff erosion, and there's a large section of it closed off now, and I was just wondering, could I get some guidance on when we'll get an engineer in there to move the lights and the cable and whatever back? Thank you.
Chairman, we'll follow that up.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, Minister.
Councillor McAteer?
Yeah, it was just on page 8 of that again. And I think this was taken in committee. And
it's restricted this as well?
Yeah. And the reason I'm just saying that is that if you look back, it just said there was a copy circulated in the meeting. But if you go back to the original meeting, it doesn't actually give an indication to someone like myself who wasn't present at it exactly what was agreed. So there should be some sort of facility whereby councillors who haven't had the privilege of being there would then be made aware of actually what was agreed.
Okay.
Because it's a bit of a guess match.
Chairman, we know we put them in the minute, Papa. If there's been an omission here, certainly happy to follow it up if it was afterwards.
Yeah, it's just in general those sort of things. I just ask Alton to watch that because anybody, there could be a deficit there in terms of exactly what's going on. It's bad enough not being there, but then you can't access what actually happened. It's even worse.
So just to clarify, Councillor, is that the first closed session item, surveillance and...
You agreed with paragraph 2.2 and 2.3, and then you also agreed that the first part of the officer's report, but it doesn't actually say what it is.
That report is available on MinutePad.
It's not. They've looked at it, and it's not.
Okay, I can get a copy of that for
you. It just doesn't. It doesn't go into detail. It talks about figures, etc. Right, which doesn't say that's what was agreed. Because the copy, whatever was copied, was circulated. It's not here.
Right. Okay. I'll look into that and get that uploaded on the MinutePad if it's not available in yours.
Okay, councillors. We will move on then to item 8. The minutes of the Active and Healthy Communities Committee, which was held on the 24th of October. And again, we'll go through it page by page. And Michael is here, I think. Yeah. Are you coming up, Michael? Did he disappear? Oh, there he is. I thought he was ducking there. Okay. We'll just go through it page by page while Michael takes his seat. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, page 7. Can we have a proposer and seconder, Councillor Walker and Councillor Kimmins, for accuracy? Matters arising? No? Okay.
Good old form, right? Again, could I just ask again what's happening in terms of the Warren Point Community Hub? It's sort of gone to a standstill, and it's not really moving quickly or even anywhere. So it says that a copy of something was circulated at the meeting. Could I ask you know, what has there been any progress on one of the proposed sites for the hub, and have we, as many of the original partners that we once thought we still had, or once thought we had at the commence of the earlier discussions a couple of years ago. So, and those would be maybe the PSNA, the doctors, and maybe even the health trust and library. So, it's just to get an update on that.
You, Chair. Where we are at the moment is we're waiting on the police station becoming available, and that's due to the mask needing to be removed before they'll dispose of the site. The report that went to the committee set out the history of the situation here, and I'm sure you're very well aware of it. And the proposal was that we would meet with all of the interested parties to see how many of them remain interested in developing a community centre. So I would hope to bring a further report on that next month, having met all of the interested parties to see how many of them are still interested in a partnership with the council to develop a community centre. So.
We will move on then to item 8, which is the minutes from the RTNS committee, which was held on the 18th of October. Adam is here to join us, so Michael, you can take the seat and we'll let Adam in. And we will go through the minutes again, page by page, for accuracy. Page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, page 8. And can we have a proposal?
No,
page 7. Can we have a proposer and seconder for accuracy, please? Councillor Kimmins and Councillor Traynor. And have we any matters arising? Councillor Byrne.
Thanks, Chair. Just a question on the brown bins that were rolled out, and where it's agreed here to provide additional liners, two rolls to each household. I just want to know what value for money is that. I know the Neary and Mourne legacy end had brown bins for God knows how long, I think over 10 years or whatever. And is it still the case that, as I used to do before my dad fell out of me, was wrap up all the food waste in newspaper and put it into the bin? Because I know the notes that were given out to us in the old Neary end that you could put food into newspaper and put it into the bin, save you using, you know, the bags that were available at the time anyhow. I'm sort of conscious of, this is the directorate last year that couldn't make the 2% savings. And we know the issues in the RTS directorate. And when we have made savings in the disposal costs, we're certainly then, you know, going to supply two rolls of bags to all households. And I know there are, you know, some households where they would need them supplied, as it says, on an ongoing basis. But certainly not all households would be looking for the bags that are using it, especially in the old end, that are using the brown bins for years and years and years. I suppose I speak, you know, on behalf of myself, that I wouldn't be interested in getting them. So I think it's a huge cost that we're looking at 100,000. And I know it's going to be reviewed in 2018, you know, for rolling out 133,000 next year, but you know, the cost of 94,000 this year, is it the best use of money, especially in a director that is, you know, overspends year on year?
Yes, Chairman, thank you. Yes, options were presented to RTS. And I think what we're able to demonstrate, certainly from others and their experience, that to continue and increase the take-up of utilising Brown Bin, we need to maintain initiatives, and one of which we felt, certainly from feedback from residents and members, issuing free of charge at liners and expanding where you can actually pick those up will not only continue brown bin usage, but increase brown bin usage. So we actually presented, I think, a payback by virtue of saving on black bin. Those savings, I think, as first port of call, ought to go towards continuing the brown bin rollout and continuing the expansion of waste being utilised by the brown bin. And that's why we also suggested a review in March just to ensure that there is increased take-up of brown bin. If there isn't, then of course we'll come back to members and identify that fact. But I think with any change in waste stream, we need to constantly market, come up with new initiatives, and the liners have seen, certainly in the early years of brown bin rollout, as a necessary part of that process. And RTS obviously agreed on a particular option which will obviously incur that cost and then be reviewed again in March.
Specific question that I want an answer that I asked there is the use of newspaper in the bin.
Yes, you can, if you so wish. Yes.
People are aware of that. We're all aware of food, they may not have rules on that. They're not aware of the newspaper.
I think, Chairman, that's a good comment, and we can incorporate that in future marketing of the initiative as an alternative if people wish to use that as an alternative. It's fine.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd just like to, first of all, I have a question, but just like to congratulate the director and all the staff who was involved in the rollout of the brown bins for separate collection of food waste. It's certainly been very successful and in reducing or increasing rather recycling targets. It was actually Councillor O'Byrne has mentioned about the compostable bags. I'd actually brought it to committee that we offer compostable bags because I had got several phone calls from folk who were just concerned about the yuck factor, for want of a better word. And when the sums were done, we can see that the savings in the back bin waste is more than paying, substantially more than paying for the cost of the compostable bags. So I think the compostable bags are a necessity. First of all, it'll encourage householders to recycle kitchen waste when they don't have to go out to various retail outlets and buy them, because most people are actually wanting to actually go out and buy them and not, you know, to make it a nice, clean and hygienic operation. And the fact that they now are offered them at various council sites like recycling centres or council community facilities, you know, is a big, big aid to recycling targets. And I would worry that if we didn't have them, that we would go backwards because we had plateaued in our recycling targets. What I would just like to ask the director, through yourself, Chair, is what was our recycling targets before the brown bin waste project, and what do you reckon it is now? What's the recycling targets now? And does he think that there will be further possibility for further improvement of that target?
Yeah, the existing target for the authority is 50% overall by 2020. And before brown bin rolled out, I think the overall was around the 41%. And actually for the last quarter, the rate has got to 48%. So, and as you say though, there's a danger of it plateauing and then dropping back down again. But to get to that 50 is still very difficult and challenging. And certainly the Brown Waste Initiative has got us a long way so far.
Thank you very much, Adam. Councillor McAteer.
Sure. Yeah, it was just on page 4 of that, at the very last, where it was on the proposal Councillor Craig and Councillor Taylor had asked about the renewable energy proposals, a number of applications that were passed in the Uriam-Warren area, and how they any agreed to contribute to the renewable energy targets. I wasn't sure of the context of that when I read it, and I was wondering, you know, was that just, you know, windmills, or was that solar panels on dwellings and commercial premises as well? Was it the whole compass of renewables? You know, because it's just a bit of information that maybe they can enlighten me a wee bit.
I think the question was the whole picture. So where are we going naturally by virtue of numbers of applications coming in terms of energy and renewables? and we didn't have the answer, so that was a question that we've taken away now, and we'll present back to next RTS committee as to how many applications have come in, how many have been approved, and how many have actually started on site. Yes.
I know your name was mentioned in particular. Okay, Councillor Mernon.
Thanks, Chair. Is it probably getting tired of me raising this, but maybe I'll get an answer at some stage. Your targets for your recycling, give you a hand getting them up. We've been told many times here that businesses do get offered blue bins in the district, but yet we can't find any way of getting a blue bin. So could we get an answer of, well, our businesses do get them? If they don't, why not?
I'll have to take that away because I'm actually not aware. We certainly offer blue bins. We get calls for blue bins from commercial premises, and they are given blue bins. So I'd like to know if you've got some specific examples.
I've been planning one from your own business for
nine months. I can organise that immediately.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to ask Mr. Wilkinson, is there any possibility that I'm not doing anything. Phones are up.
I have a go at answering that question, Chair. Well, certainly at the moment, we don't know what will be repealed and what won't. So any initiatives that we're currently considering, we will present to members the current legislational framework and associated with that any prospects of change before any decisions are made. We certainly haven't looked back and identified where perhaps we could change what we're doing. I think that's a question that does need to be considered as we move forward, but certainly not at this stage.
Okay. 10 of the agenda. This is Ireland 2040, our plan. I'm just going to hand over to Liam, who will talk us through it. Okay, Liam?
Thanks, Chairman. This is response to the South of Ireland's National Planning Framework, Ireland 2040. We are recommending a response is attached on the basis that whatever happens on the island of Ireland, in particular regarding South of Ireland, will also have an impact on in the Newry area and indeed the East Coast. And I bring that to your attention on a couple of points. It's first of all the importance of the Newry-Dundalk metro area in terms of the urban conurbation, in terms of the growth, and that there's a counterbalance. And again, we've talked at the City Deal in terms of the importance of the Dundalk, Carlingford Lock, Newry area in terms of the growth of population growth on the island of Ireland, and indeed the demand for population growth within that area. I suppose the other point is that the Dublin-Belfast Economic Corridor is the main economic driver on the island of Ireland, and it's therefore important that we make sure that any development within the Dundalk area is critically also important for actually driving the economy within the Newry-wide area. I also pick up the issue regarding the Southern Relief Road in terms of connectivity to the South Down area, and in particular the importance of Warren Point Harbour. I quote some figures there where Warren Point Harbour, actually 50% of the grain that comes into the south of Ireland comes through Warren Point Harbour. Indeed, 70% of the timber coming from the European Union goes into the south of Ireland. And indeed, a lot of cement that comes from Quinn Cement actually goes out through into the UK. So Warren Point Port is a critical driver in terms of the economy, and that's critically important. The other thing is, from a Kilkee point of view, is, you know, 50% of the fish processed in Kilkee actually comes from fishing ports, Dunmore East, Hove, a number of fishing posts, I'm told, by the fish producers in this area. So therefore, again, the importance of that this area in particular is critically important in terms of the driver. So I've recommended that, you know, the importance, and again, I've sort of the background paper show you, the 2040 looks at actually looking at sort of regional growth within the south of Ireland, actually pushing 50% of the regional growth to the west. Again, and a big amount of that growth around the city of around Dublin, that kind of if that impacts on the Dundalk, North Louth area, and indeed the Monaghan area, that could have a major impact in terms of investment and jobs for our communities living on the border areas. So again, Chairman, it's a response. Again, I have got a copy of the draft response from Louth County Council. It's going to be put on our next MOU agenda for members of the MOU to consider and discuss that. But again, it's just getting, this is replied by the 10th, and I felt it was too important, while we haven't been formally consulted, that actually we submit a response, given, you know, our MOU and our collaboration with Louth County Council. And again, I've shared this with them in terms of the views. So happy to take any more comments, Chairman, add to the paper for submission.
Sure, I can't understand why we're dealing with a planning framework for the Republic of Ireland. I know what Liam is already after saying and covering all that. But after Brexit and after the leave, there's a border there. So really, like, why does the Irish Republic want us to consult with them? What decision is being made? And can I ask how much this is costing this council to look at that?
Chairman, I'm not going to get into the debate why we respond. I've sort of set out in the paper why I think it's critically important, because it impacts businesses in our area and the population and people living in our area. That's the reason why I felt it was important for a response. But again, council can make a decision not to make a response if it so wishes. The only thing it costs you is my time writing it, Chairman, because and again, working with their own planning department. I have consulted with, again, one as part of a development of our statutory plan, we need to consult with the Louth County Council, similar to the way the Louth County Council consult with us in terms of our plan, because people live adjacent infrastructure, roads, grid, energy, all rely on a cross-border basis between both areas. But again, Chairman, there has been this conflict with news, nobody other than staff time to draw this up.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Thank you. Yes, and I suppose it's quite appropriate this comes up tonight, following on from our first meeting of our steering committee of the local development plan. We're actually, funny, it's something that I had brought up, the fact that we need to have some cognizance of spatial planning cooperation and spatial planning development on a cross-border, cross-council and cross-counties method. So, I think actually we should go as far as either taking this on a formal basis to the Joint Council Committee, or else form, you know, some type of a subgroup that will actually react as Brexit is rolled out, because I can see, you know, the situation changing very rapidly in the next maybe 6 to 12 months, as we're all facing God knows what, as I say, when we'll see what's coming down the line in terms of Brexit. And I do think that we need to be discussing that as that happens, not just simply submitted this. I think this should be a working document. I know they're asking for feedback, but I do think because of the relationships north, south, east and west in this council, that we need to have some sort of a committee or some sort of a sub-working group to look at it and stay in touch with it. Because if you looked at what was proposed, even our local development plan, we were talking about the proper use of cross-border and matter about Brexit, cross-border sharing of health, the health services north and south, you know, and education as well. So, you know, just because we're leaving doesn't mean we don't plan for the future. And I think it's absolutely essential. I'm delighted to see this actually coming up in the south. It shows that there's a bit of reality on board somewhere along the line, you know. So, keep.
Again, Chairman, as I said to you, you know, we had a presentation to the MOU committee from both the region's development strategy in the north and the Ireland 2040 department are dealing with that in the south. So again, it's going to be on the MOU agenda going forward, but it is a particular issue for the MOU. That's what the MOU is about, collaborative work across border in terms of planning, tourism and a number of other areas. So certainly, Chairman, it'll be on the MOU committee. But again, what I'm saying to you is this has been driven by the south. It's not Councillor Burgess right, it's a southern it is a southern agenda. What we do is we can just feed into it, and I think we need to be working in collaboration with our colleagues in the County Council on that in terms of getting these points made.
Councillor Riley, I have seen you waving at me, but there are a number of councillors before you, so don't think that I have ignored you. I know your light's not working. Councillor Craig, you are next.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, I don't have a difficulty working together with County Council with regards to economic advantage, and certainly from Councillor Burgess' point of view, I'm not certainly have any intention of working together on the political front, and you would well know that, Chair. But I do see the merit in physical infrastructure, talking in terms of that, and even tourism and energy as well, for instance, a north-south interconnector. So, all in all, I think it can work to our advantage. And I mean, I know that there is a considerable amount of trade north-south. I do trust that that will remain so, and I think we should have the structures in place that still allows that to happen and facilitate that and even grow it. So I don't have a difficulty there. I'm still a unionist, and I don't have to say that to you, Chair, but there is a certain advantage as I see it here. Yeah.
Choose your comments, Councillor. Councillor Andrews?
Thanks so much, Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank the author of the paper. There's been a lot of hard work put into it. And in relation to, I welcome the news about Kilkenny and all about the Fishing Harbour, but there's just some points we'd like to raise too. In relation to the paper, maybe the likes of this part of the council area could be included in as well. And also, we'll have another fishing port. Our glass, you know, I feel like with the nature of our council area, it's massive from one end to the other. And I do accept the point with the geographical location of Newry's on the main corridor between Belfast to Dublin. And as I say, and it's good to see Warren Point Harbour and other services and agencies doing so well. And it is important that with what's coming down the road, that we need to have our position in place and where we go from here. But as I say, just in relation, you know, just I feel that, you know, we should cover the whole area in relation to the likes of Arglass and all, and Downpatrick, and even the road link to Belfast, that Belfast corridor should include this part of this country area as well. But apart from that, though, that's my personal take on it. But I think the paper has been an excellent piece of work, and it's important having the road map in place to move our decision forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. My comments will put in on the response of Councillor Burgess, but I suppose it's refreshing to hear from Councillor Glenn Hanna in between that. But I suppose it's oh, sorry, not Glenn Hanna. I'm not there all the same. I'm blaming Monday again. Every week, that's not there what learned or taught it. The regional growth And this document talks about the regional growth of the South. It does it. We can't reduce these things to black and white issues. We can't, you know, look and say, come from a national South Unionist perspective and say it's black or white. It's not like that. I think when Liam's making the point of regional growth in the South and they're talking about 1 million people or 1.4 million people on the island, we've already said in the city deal that cities like Dublin are busting at the seams. You're going to get the same in other cities down the South. I know they're saying that 50% of the 1 million people over the next 20 years will be in and around Galway, Cork and Dublin, but 50% of it will be outside that. And as Liam, you're saying that it'll push to the west, it'll push to the north, it'll push to Drogheda and up around Newry and Dundalk. So I think whether we engage or if we engage or not, in 20 years' time, it's an issue that we're going to be dealing with. You know, we have... my partner works in Dublin and travels cross-border but lives in the north. You know, there's issues there where we're looking at, I suppose we brought it up at the city deal with housing in and around Newry Dundalk area to deal with how Dublin's busting at the seams and Drogheda is as well. So it has to be looked at in the context of, you know, an island-wide context. I think in the subcommittee, this is the place for the MOU. This is, you know, what we set up Loud and Newry and Mourn MOU for. And I know Declan made the point that, you know, Monaghan as well, but with the border corridor, that groups to come together, all the 11 councils across the border corridor, and it's something, even these smaller regions here, that could be discussed. But we need to deal with these issues by, it's the exact same as, you know, the city deal, or exactly, you know, the work that we're doing at the MOU. We can't reduce it to black and white, and to do that is actually just, you know, it's been childish for us.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just follow on from Councillor Bourne. It obviously is a very important report, Chair. I certainly have no wish to trivialise it, but one of the things that has jumped out in there, just flicking through the pages, is I've absolutely no desire here to wind up my unionist colleagues, but there's very protectionist language used throughout this report, Chair, which seems to be increasingly becoming the norm in this part of the world. I have to say, Chair, when I hear the talk of Ireland and Northern Ireland as two separate entities, it doesn't sit easy on me. It doesn't rest easy on my ears. And although, Chair, it may be a political reality, it doesn't reflect well on us as a perceived nationalist council to be reinforcing a petitionist mindset through the language that we use in official correspondence. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, hold on, Councillor. Councillor Savage, you have indicated to speak. Councillor Savage.
Councillor Henry, sorry, sir.
Should I lock me off?
I'm on here. Well, I look this up. Yeah. Yes, Chair. Chair, first of all, I welcome the comments from Councillor Craig, because of having seen it firsthand how little energy and effort they put in to the cross-border bodies over the last number of years. I'm glad to see that there's an appetite for cross-border engagement. That said, Chair, you know, we need to get real of the fact that whenever Brexit does eventually come, it's not going to mean that the six counties are going to break away and take themselves off into the sea. The bottom line is that it could take upwards of 10 years of a transitional period for Brexit to happen, if and when it ever does happen. And I think we all need to be realistic about that, because that's what's coming out of London at the moment, that it could take upwards of 10 years for the transitional period to take place. That said, we as a council need to be working very closely with our neighbours in Dundalk and, in fact, Monaghan. And I think if you look at what has been achieved in the greater Newry area, and I make no bones about referring to Newry, because that's where the success has been, where we worked strategically on a twin town approach during the late 80s and early 90s with our counterparts in Dundalk to help rebuild this region. And I think what we need to look at, and this is something that I will continue to go on about, is the fact that whatever the impact of Brexit happens, there will be seepage of jobs north, and there will be seepage of jobs south. And I think if we work in a joined up way with our partners in County Louth and Dundalk and Monaghan, then what we can do is work to ensure that when there are seepage of jobs north, that we pick them up in the Greater Newry area, and when there are seepage of jobs south, they're picked up in County Louth and County Monaghan. What that does is safeguard this economic region, cross-border region that's there. And the wrinkles that will have to be ironed out, and there will be wrinkles that will have to be ironed out in relation to mobility of workers north and south, will have to be dealt with, and we have to play a role in that. And I think we should be taking the lead in working with our counterparts in the south and to show that we're a progressive council and looking beyond Brexit to try and make it work. Otherwise, as was said by one of the correspondents of the Independent at the Week in Politics on Sunday, there's some people in the north don't realise that there's the potential whenever Brexit happens that the economy of Europe will close the door on Northern Ireland and the lights will go out and we'll go back to where we were in 1994. And I think we need to be shown that we are very much keeping the lights on and keeping the door open, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. A legal point in the fact that the National Spatial Strategy and National Planning Framework, both North and South, aren't driven by the European Community. They're driven by the needs of the overall planning system to have an intelligent way of approaching transport, infrastructure, energy, tourism and economic development across the island of Ireland, with no reference at all to Brexit and not driven by the European Community. It was great pleasure for me to see the two National Spatial Development Units, both from Stormont and from the Republic, at the cross-border inter-county or inter-council meetings there about 3 months ago. And it was a pleasure finally to see the Republic's National Spatial Strategy figure out that you don't go to from Dublin to Letterkenny via Bundoran. And you actually drive across Tyrone and up through Derry, and planning in the routes that you would need to take, and that tourism didn't stop at the border. And likewise, the officer from the Northern Irish Spatial Planning Department again was looking at in terms of economic development and infrastructure and the dependency we have in import and export of goods to Larne, for the Republic, or indeed to Warren Point. I must say, Robert, in 10 years of working as a councillor, I've never heard you put petty politics ahead of the economic development and the welfare of the people of this area. It's very unlike you.
Thanks very much, Madam Chair. I'll just comment on what Jarlath said there about Ireland and Northern Ireland. That is the official EU terms, so whenever we're out of the European Union, maybe we can call it the Free State and the North or something like that in correspond. I'm kidding, Robert. I'm just pointing out how absolutely silly a comment that was from Councillor Dinley. But there are big, big issues that this council needs to address, because I'm happy enough with what the aims stuck to. Because if you look at Switzerland, which is outside the European Union, look at Norway, they have very close cooperation with their European neighbours on matters of infrastructure and planning and that type of thing. And it's just common sense, really. I don't think there's no loss of sovereignty for either state in cooperating on infrastructure issues. So I have no issues with that whatsoever. One of the big issues, though, because Stormont has fallen and does not look like it's going to be coming back for a fair while, you're also going to lose, and you know, it's a statutory obligation that the six cross-border bodies are wound up, that the North-South Ministerial Councils wound up, and the East-West Cooperation is wound up. So in the event of Stormont been stalled for a number of years, which looks very likely because they can't form any agreement, we do need some mechanism to actually deal with our neighbours in the south. One of the other big issues, and I get this from speaking to people who
are business people in the Republic of Ireland and very well respected people, and they are very, very concerned that the south of Ireland is booming again in a euro bubble, and at a time whenever the Republic should be wanting to raise interest rates to slow the system down, they can't, because that is designated from Frankfurt, and the Germans will not raise interest rates because it hurts their manufacturing. So the south could actually implode very dramatically, as it did not so long ago. And the other issue is from the European Union imposing their will on the south in terms of corporation tax. You know, those you turn out from Dublin Airport and go straight across to the west of Ireland, 50% of the jobs to the left-hand side are based on American companies. Now, if the European Union insists through time that Ireland puts its corporation tax up to the European average, those jobs will go. And I think that the Republic needs to really look at how it's going to run its affairs with the European Union. And indeed, if we leave in some form of Brexit that does not give the trade agreement that we want, Northern Ireland will be okay, because we'll still be in our internal market of 65 million people, and we will still be able to trade even on tariff levels. But the Republic is going to suffer terribly, far worse than us. And it's in the Republic's interest, and all councils all over Ireland, and England, Scotland and Wales also, should be lobbying hard for Ireland to get a special dispensation to allow it to trade, given its unique circumstances on it, the most westerly island of Europe, to trade with its neighbour. But I have certainly no problem at all with Liam doing what he's doing. It makes sense, and especially in the current environment. But that's my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Hyland.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. No, I'd just like to welcome Liam's report, our Chief Executive's report, and thank him for the effort, the obvious effort and commitment and diligence that he has put into it. You know, it'd be really foolhardy of us to think that we don't enjoy a special relationship with people just across the border. How Newry enjoys a really good relationship with Dundalk, and always has done for many, many years. And how the people of Cooley have a special relationship with the people of the Mourns, as exemplified by the channel across them from Greencastle to Green Ore. That's a living testament to the fact that we have a special relationship. Likewise, the people in South Armagh, along the border, have special relationships with people in Monaghan, in Castle Blaney, in Carrickmacross, Clonus. That's living proof of relationships. And we have proof of, indeed, when you go to Daisy Hill and you see the number of Southern people who are using the facilities that are there and bringing revenue into that hospital and into the services that it provides. I have a son-in-law who has been working in Dublin the last 2 years. He makes his living from Dublin, building houses in it, as do hundreds, if not thousands, of other people from our area and from across the north. And likewise, there's a flow from people in the south coming across in the north every day. I mean, last week I cycled up the town in Newry, and there were three cars in front of me, one from County Clare, one from County Cork, and I think the other one from Tipperary. These are people who are travelling hundreds and hundreds of miles to come to our area. And we should be extending, as we always have done, the hand of friendship. We shouldn't be worried and putting up rails and saying, oh, we don't want anything to do with the Southern Government. This is going to affect the whole island of Ireland. And Ireland's such a small place, there's such a small population, it's going to have direct and massive impacts. And we should be preparing for it. And I welcome our council for taking the initiative of dealing with it as it has gone. Because as somebody else has mentioned, there's going to be a lot more work in relation to this in the months and years to come. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Councillor, we'll have to take a vote. Councillor Burgess, yes, I will allow you in just to clarify.
I have no problem. This is costing our council nothing, and it's only cheap talk between the two countries. No problem with that. That's what it is. There's 70 million people in the UK, and I would rather see more business heading that way. And we don't seem to put any effort in or going that way. And the other thing is, in Ireland, the north to me of Ireland is Donegal. This is Northern Ireland. And you only have to read through that there. And there's nothing like angerness. And that's what it's doing, Chair. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay, Councillor Burgess, I think we need to take a vote on whether we go with the recommendations for propose and second. Propose and second. Davey, did you call for a report? A show of hands is surely enough.
If he's caught, for a part of what we need to take
it. He's called.
He has to call, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, hold on, councillors. Hold on, councillors. A councillor has asked for a recorded vote on the proposals. So we have to do that because that has been requested. That's what we actually have to do, unfortunately. Councillor Highland has called for that, so we are going to take a recorded vote.
Proposed by Councillor Rowan and seconded by Councillor Doran.
Okay.
That's number two. Councillor Andrews?
Four.
Councillor Bailey absent. Councillor Brown absent. Councillor Burgess?
Yes.
Councillor Burns absent. Councillor Byrne? Four. Councillor Carr absent. Councillor Casey. Councillor Clark. I was going to say William Clark if he's back. Councillor Garrett Craig. Councillor Kern absent. Councillor Devlin. Councillor Dorn. Councillor Enright. Councillor Fitzpatrick. Councillor Hannah. Councillor Hart. Absent, sorry. Councillor Harvey. Councillor Hertie. Councillor Hyland. Councillor Kimmins. Councillor Larkin. Councillor Lockhart, absent. Councillor McCauley. Councillor McAteer. Councillor McMahon. Councillor McMurray. Councillor McGrew. Councillor Murnin. Councillor O'Gribben, absent. Councillor Murray. Councillor Quinn. Councillor Riley.
Aye.
For the paper. Councillor Rowan. Councillor Savage. Councillor Stokes. Councillor Starvin. Absent. Councillor Stokes. Councillor Taylor. Abstained. Councillor Tinley. Gone. Councillor Traynor. And Councillor Walker.
Four.
Twenty-eight for, one against, and two abstentions.
Okay, councillors. Thank you. We'll move on now to the first of our motions, and this is the notice of motions received from Councillor Traynor. Councillor Traynor, would you like to read out the motion, please?
This council calls on the Education Authority to keep Ardan Abanam Outdoor Education Centre open and to reverse its decision to downgrade Killaloe and Killowan Outdoor Education Centres, as these decisions will disadvantage young people from this district and beyond.
Okay, have we a seconder for the motion? Councillor Murnin. Okay. Councillor Traynor, are you intending to go on? Yes?
Yeah,
sorry.
Just to maybe give the opening remarks, Chair. During the consultation process on the review of outdoor education provisions and facilities, this council's position was against proposals to close or downgrade outdoor education centres and provision in the Newry, Mourne and Down council area due to the negative impacts that such changes would have on the young people and communities within this district. This was the position that was taken with unanimous community and political support across this district. A decision has been made by the Education Authority to close Ardan Abanam and to downgrade Killaloe and Killowan outdoor education centres, and now we as a council must maintain our position that such changes should not take place. Chair, I don't want to rehash what we had said during the consultation process, and I'm going to really focus now on what's actually happened since. The consultation that was undertaken by the Education Authority was typical of consultations that are taken here in the North, designed in such a way to facilitate the steering of the outcome towards the desired result of the authority that has undertaken the consultation. It is a humiliation of the people of Northern Ireland and has made a farce of this consultation process that preceded the decision. As we have been continually reminded, the review that was carried out was as a response to the Priorities for Youth document of 2013, which stated that this will include a review of the statutory youth estate and outdoor education centres. It stated "and outdoor education centres," not merely outdoor education centres. One would have thought that the review of the youth service estate and outdoor education centres would have been undertaken in a complementary manner, not picking one sector and then doing the other. What if the rationalisation in the youth service estate had, in that consultation, saved money that could then have been pumped into the outdoor education sector? Why was it done in such a disjointed manner? We have yet to be given these answers. The Education Authority has stated that they will be supporting EOTIS provision at Killaloe and Killowen. The question that has to be asked is, why could this not be accomplished within the previous model? How will the introduction of this new provision impact upon current service provision? Essentially, this review was a cost-saving measure. However, we are now in a situation where the Education Authority are proposing to add new provisions into centres to create specialisms in centres. You know, where is the cost savings? It's a capital investment that is needed, not cost savings. It's capital investment that is needed. In Priorities for Youth, it states the voluntary sector will be encouraged and supported to provide those youth services assessed as needed, and the statutory youth sector will continue to deliver youth service where there is no viable alternative. I, like most people, appreciate the services that the voluntary sector provide locally in this district. And I, like most, welcome any and all support that the voluntary sector receives to deliver these services. But I would ask, why such support can only be given now? Why has it not been provided before? With the closure of Ard na Bannan, the downgrading of centres, and the range of new provision that may be developed in existing centres, will there be the capacity within both the voluntary sector and the statutory sector to meet the needs of our young people? If so, where is the evidence of this? Because we cannot go ahead with these plans unless they can provide the evidence that is going to say that we are going to have enhanced outcomes, we're going to have better outcomes, we're going to have a better quality of service through the remodelling. It would seem that the Education Authority is hoping that the voluntary sector will be able to meet the needs, but what support and resource will be able to be given to ensure that this is the case? Chairperson, the outdoor education and youth provision have historically been underfunded by the education boards, and this seems to be the theme that is continuing under the new Education Authority. The learning that takes place within these environments is different. So yes, it is different from the formal learning traditionally associated with the school environment. However, it's no less important. Rather, it should be complementary of the learning of schools. To now remodel the service with no extra funding will not enhance services. If the Education Authority wishes to enhance the services, they would be better to focus on the resources that they allocate for such provision. And just a quick point, Ard na Bannan, there was £1.2 million spent in Ard na Bannan about 3-4 years ago to upgrade that facility. The question that I have to be asked, was that a wasted investment now that they're going to close the centre? I welcome other members who are using this, Chairperson.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Walker.
Thank you very much, Chair. And our party, the EUP, don't have any problem in supporting the motion. In the past, I've said it was wrong, and Councillor Traynor talks about consultations and consultation papers. I've always said the consultations are only a paper exercise. Feel-good factor, whether it's an education authority, whether it's a health service, or whoever. So it is. 9 times out of 10, they never listen to them consultations. Decisions have already been made. When this announcement was made back in January, myself and Councillor Andrews, with our concerns for Killaloe and Delamont, seek an urgent meeting with the department. We got that meeting. Unfortunately, on the day of the meeting, Councillor Andrews was very in and out, couldn't attend, but I took accompanying letter along in relation to the centres, and that made it clear to them that it was opposed to it. Subsequently, when it had come out, what was happening in the last 2 or 3 weeks, myself, Councillor Andrews, the Member of Parliament for Strangford and the former Minister, Peter Weir, met last Monday in Dundonald with Arlene Keane and her team in relation to this. We made it clear that we were opposed to it. Now, I have to say, we have got some joy with Killarney and Delamont. Delamont is going to remain open. They're actually going to enhance Delamont, so they are. Put new services, hopefully, in there. While I am not happy that the seaboard in Killarney, in the centre of the town, will be closing as we know it, and it will be used as a centre for kids with special needs. We have been given an assurance that in the Killarney area, in them two centres in Killarney, there will be no redundancies whatsoever in relation to them. So I, as an elected representative for that area, am quite content that we're not losing any jobs. One or two of the jobs from the seaboard will move up into Delamont. Hopefully we can grow Delamont, so we can. They're hopefully in the future going to work with the council as well, so they are in relation to it. But I'm still opposed to the closure of Ardna Bannon. Ardna Bannon is a centre that even I went to when I was at school, so it just shows you how long Ardna Bannon has been about. Now, what they told us at the meeting was that Ardna Bannon has served its purpose because it's only used for overnight stays, etc. And that they're having to ferry them out on buses the next morning, whenever after breakfast, and that to go out and do whatever activities they're doing. But I think Ardna Bannon is unique and it's got a historical factor within this area, and it was bringing kids from all over this province to it. And I also say that, and I've said to Arlene Key, that these centres bring everyone together. We talk about bringing communities together, so we do. When do you start bringing communities together? From their school, not when they leave school, not when they get older in life, but when they're starting out on their journey in life through school. This brings all sections of the community together, whether it be Killarney, whether it be Killowen, whether it be Ardna Bannon, or wherever. So it is. So, as I say, we totally support this motion, and I want to thank Councillor Traynor for bringing it tonight.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Merlin.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And seconding John's proposal here, or a motion, John has talked to us about the educational benefits that goes along with the outdoor centre. But Ardna Bannon's more than an outdoor centre for this council. We rely heavily on our placing our eggs heavily in the tourism basket. But it's not just tourists from out of state. The children that come to Ardna Bannon, they learn about our area. They go home excited, probably exhausted, and the parents see how much they've enjoyed being in this area and see the benefits that they get from being in this area, and they return again and again. So we're getting a massive benefit from this. My daughter, Billy, went to Ardna Bannon, and I never had the benefit of doing it, but she still goes bouldering when she comes home from university. Up Bloody Bridge, as our Vice Chair will know. So it's imperative that we ensure that Ardna Bannon stays open, not just for the education of our children, but to feed into this council's tourism strategy and allow you to develop our young people and turn them into frequent visitors to this area. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hyland.
Yeah, thanks, sir. Sir, as a parent whose children have greatly enjoyed the benefits of outdoor pursuits at Killowen, I would like to support this important motion. And there is a great deal of evidence and research which shows the great benefits of outdoor residentials, including educational attainment, pupil development, improved welfare, increased motivation, enhanced creativity, and of course greater social interaction. By closing and reducing access to these outdoor centres, these are the benefits which will not be accessible to the same amount of children in the southbound and wider region. And could I point out that the the original recommendations, which were deeply flawed, because the overwhelming response to the consultation was that there was no change desired by either the general public or the majority of user groups. This, therefore, only adds to the astonishment that such a decision can be rationally justified. And while this motion by Council Chairman be welcome supporter, there is a key question for some of the larger political groups here. For a decision that has attracted such widespread public and political derision, what was the stance taken by the politically appointed reps within the board committee? Maybe we could get an answer on that important one. Just going to finish off by saying I have a friend who works in Cologne, and he has assured me that he has worked there over 10 years, and there's never been a time when the place hasn't been used or widely used by many, many people. So how are they putting forward an argument that we need less time for people at the likes of Cologne and the other outdoor pursuits areas? It's madness, and they can find no real rational response to it. Although, interesting enough, I mean, I had a phone call from a resident in Cologne saying that she had heard that a body which is based in Newry City may be moved now down to Cologne. So is there other reasons for these pursuit centres to be downgraded? But I say again, I am members of the independent group and fully support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor McCauley?
Okay, yep. I certainly welcome Councillor Trainor's motion tonight as well. Despite the Education Authority running a consultation process which saw tens of thousands of people voice their opposition to this, it's very, very disappointing to see the recent decision to close Ardnabannan and downgrade then Cologne and Elmont as well. As a student user probably of both Ardnabannan and Cologne myself, these facilities have to date offered a very unique and educational opportunity through fun and challenging activities right in the heart of our beautiful Mourne Mountains, with the natural landscape that adds to the invaluable learning experiences that they offer. I would like to see this our younger generations offered the same challenging and learning opportunities that we had, not least then the job security of all employees involved. This is just another example of the local issues that we face with no minister in place to apply necessary pressure and actually listen to the public. So based on this, our party group will be supporting the motion tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Councillor Ruland.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say also welcome the motion brought by Councillor Trainor, just to say that our group would also be supporting it. At this stage, I think everything has been said, but concur with all those comments. They are a very important resource to the council area. Could I also just say in the last number of days too that there has been quite a concern from the residents of Cologne in relation to what the centre may be used for in the future, and I think that's something that possibly from the Education Authority that needs to be clarified, and if we maybe could add that in at this stage.
Okay, Councillor Trainor, are you happy that that would be a clarification would be sought from the Education Authority? We seem to have general consensus that everybody is in support of. Councillor Andrews, I didn't see you. Sorry.
Thanks very much, Chair. And in relation to the motion, at that meeting last week, Endondon, they did listen attentively to what was offered, especially in relation to Delmont. But at the same time, I spoke and I stressed the point to those present that the proposal to close the Lakes of Ardnabannan and the downgrading of the other facilities at Cologne and what Kildare was detrimental and totally wrong. You know, for example, over this past while, there's not much emphasis on healthy lifestyle for kids, you know, between healthy eating, more exercise, and more friendly. And the fact is, the Lakes of Ardnabannan, I went there myself now, you know, it does encourage a lot of, you know, friendships and brings people together and, you know, lifelong friendships, you know. And at the same time, the idea of this, it's penny wise and being a case of pound foolish in the long term, it's going to be detrimental to the people that use it the most.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Riley?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I would like to support the motion as well because I may seem like an old man now, but I attended Ardnabannan when I was 14 or 15, and it was a wonderful experience. And you meet people from all across different sections of the community and work together and mountaineer and whatever, and it is a wonderful experience. Can I once again congratulate Councillor Walker and Councillor Andrews for their teamwork and what they've done in their ward regarding that centre was remarkable, and they have to be congratulated for it. But the one thing that I really cannot understand, and if John will allow me to mention Cologne, one of the most prestigious centres for outdoor education in anywhere in these islands, on the shores of Conningford Loch, all the facilities, sailing, canoeing, bouldering, you name it, it's there. Mountains behind it, sea in front of it, and they're closing it. It's staggering beyond belief that Cologne is going to close when it's such a fantastic facility. But I agree with the motion, and I would like if John would include that Cologne should be also retained, because there are rumours circulating now within the village of Cologne that it could be used as a type of psychiatric treatment facility for people. And while that, you know, I would not see young people being shipped in there and abandoned. If people do have mental health problems, they should be properly catered for and a properly trained staff and whatever. But again, that's only hearsay and rumour, and hopefully we can get clarification on that. But certainly these type of centres are indispensable to our community and building relations. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Traynor, would you just like to sum up? And as I say, I think we have general consensus of agreement, but just sum up for me, please.
Certainly. Chairperson, just needed to clarify for Councillor Riley that Cologne is actually not going to be closing. I have a document called Moving Forward, which has been issued by the Education Authority, which I'll send through to Councillor Riley, and that will detail out what the plans are for Cologne. But it isn't to be closing. In fact, it's going to be turned into what's known as an ELDIS provision, which is for education other than that at school, for children who can't attend school through illness or through other reasons. So it's still going to be retained for the use of young people. And just to put that out there on record, that Cologne is not closing. Sorry, Chair. But I appreciate the contributions and certainly welcome the amendment from Councillor Ruam. The review of the outdoor education provision, for me, like most, has raised more questions than it's created solutions. We all want the best for young people, and the Education Authority needs to reverse its decision of the closure of Ard na Bannan and the downgrading of Cologne and Killaloe. Following this, they should seek to meet with staff, those in the voluntary sector and the local authority here, to explore alternatives that can meet the needs of all our young people. The DUP Minister for Education at the time of the consultation was Mr. Peter Weir, who is one of the MLAs, and Mr. Weir, as I'm sure most will know, had the opportunity to pause the consultation to take stock of the situation and the issues that were raised, not only by this council, but by parents, young people, staff, educators, voluntary organisations and the local politicians. In fact, this council had asked as much of the Minister in writing to the Minister and seeking for him to pause the consultation and for seeking a meeting with him. Yet this request fell on deaf ears. Now we have no Minister, no Executive and no Assembly. We, the Local Council Authority, must impress upon the Education Authority the severity of such decisions and ask for a reversal of their decision.
Okay, so everybody is in agreement with that. There is no one seems to be opposed to it. Okay, that's fine. We can move on then to item number 12, which is the motion from Councillor Clark. Councillor Clark, would you like to read it out?
Yes, thanks, Chairperson. In the aftermath of the intimidation of families from assured housing development in Cantrell Close, Belfast, that this council acknowledges the recent statement by the six main party leaders pledging their support for citizens to live in a society without fear of intimidation, free from sectarianism, and condemn all forms of sectarianism, intolerance and threats of violence. That this council also affirms the principle of the Good Friday Agreement, which promised to citizens the right to freely choose one's place of residence and the right to freedom from sectarian harassment, and pledges its support for the right to employment free from sectarian discrimination, intimidation and attack, the right to housing and to live in your home free from sectarian attack, intimidation or any other discrimination, the right to free association, recreation and to socialise at places of choice free from sectarian attack, intimidation or other discrimination, the right to practice religious faith and worship free from sectarian attack, intimidation or other discrimination, the duty to report or challenge sectarian speech, attack, intimidation or other discrimination when witnessed or heard.
Thank you, Councillor Dorn.
I'll start with motion, Chair. Yeah.
Okay.
I just say a few words, opening remarks. Can I say, firstly, sectarianism exists in our council area. I hear people saying the motion was dealing with issues outside of our council area. But as I say, we have to acknowledge that sectarianism does exist in our area. And that's a fact, and we have to endeavour to eradicate it from our community. I will not get into the examples of sectarian behaviour in our council area because it will set the tone for a sectarian debate, which I wish to avoid. Public representatives and political leaders must set the example and desist from language or actions which offend against the identity of anyone in this society. That is why the collective condemnation by parties, the six main parties of the Cantrell close threats, is so important. Sinn Féin is fully committed to tackling and eradicating sectarianism from our society, regardless of the source. We have proposed there should be a clear legal definition of sectarianism as a hate crime and enshrined within legislation. This should be enshrined within a Bill of Rights. Rights belong to us all. Equality threatens no one. Everyone has the right to live free from sectarian harassment and discrimination. Sectarianism and the denial of rights is the most direct and serious challenge facing this society and the political process. There's no acceptable level of sectarianism. It is unjustifiable. Every section of our community must demonstrate zero tolerance of sectarianism from all quarters. Political, civil, church and community leaders need to speak out with one voice against sectarianism, just as they have rightly done so in the past against racism. I move the motion, Chair.
Okay, Councillor Hannah.
I mean, Mike's working again, Chair. Henry blinked at the last time. just on this, Chair, the DUP party is represented, Chair, happy enough to acknowledge that our leader has stood alone with the other party leaders in condemning any type of sectarian or intimidation. That's just totally wrong. So this, we cannot in any way endorse it or support and make sure that it comes to an end as soon as possible. Just on this motion, we, our group, have a slight problem with it. We can support the motion down as far as the word violence. After that, I'm afraid we can't. This motion appears to be, it's strange in a way, that I don't understand why we Sinn Féin can answer this. Why is the council being asked to affirm the principles of the Good Friday Agreement?
We brought along this here tonight so that we all could see it, and it's there for anybody to see it. We can't find these. There's reference to similar things in the Good Friday Agreement, so there is, but there's not just the same as what's in this motion. On that, to be quite honest with you, we have a difficulty, so we do not see any reason why this council needs to affirm this Good Friday Agreement. We do not see any reason why we need to do this, so we don't have any shape in the form. The Good Friday Agreement was designed for the Assembly, not for Council, so it was. And Sinn Féin need to explain that. They do need to explain why they're even bringing that here tonight. The five bullet points there at the end of the motion there, I do not know why they're even bringing them to us, I'll be quite honest with you. Should this Council adopt them, Liam Hannaway is going to have to explain to our grouping at the very least. If the Council supports this motion, what are the legal implications for this Council if we legally and politically adopt this? This is nothing short of a Bill of Rights from Sinn Féin that they could not secure through the Talks Agreement. They're trying to bring it in through the back door through councils. I suspect what's going to happen in the future, Sinn Féin will start bringing this type of a motion to all the 11 councils across Northern Ireland. To be quite honest, we cannot do that here, so we can't. This is just a Bill of Rights for the back door, so it is. On the other issues, sir, we have no problem in supporting it down as far as finance, but we cannot support it as a whole. And we're asking Sinn Féin, so we are, to remove everything after the word violence.
Okay,
Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, that's a good contrary view to Councillor Hannah. Really, what Willie was doing was he was expressing the governance that underlies the Good Friday Agreement, and in fact is incumbent in councils in every aspect of law and governance in Northern Ireland. My only reservation about this motion is that I feel possibly it should be more directed, possibly to the Chief Constable, to express our concerns over recent events in Cantrell Close and other racist attacks across Belfast. And I think it is a general consensus that racism in Northern Ireland is simply a localised form of racism. And it's dressed up as sectarianism, as if it was different from racism, which in truth, underlying, it is not. And coming at a time when many of us are going to be attending the film show here in Downpatrick over the events in Loughlin Island over the coming weeks, I think it's incumbent on us all to make sure that this sort of tolerance for attacks on minorities, particularly in the Greater Belfast area, is stamped out, and indeed that the police authorities themselves pay particular attention to their duty to pursue these areas of law in the same as they pursue other areas of law. So I'd support the motion entirely, both in its intention and in its detail, but I would say possibly we should be referring it to the attention of the Chief Constable as well.
Okay, Councillor Riley.
Yeah, thanks very much, Manager. The intent in the motion, I'm sure, is laudable, in that any right-thinking person wants sectarianism stamped out. But, you know, whenever you say the right to live somewhere, whether it's a perception or whether it's real, you know, the bulk of the Protestant community actually moved out of huge areas of South Down, South Armagh, because they were being targeted by a very violent organisation, and that did create a shift of population. And it would be impossible, or the feeling is it would be impossible for those people to move back to many of those areas. So, you know, as I say, while it's laudable, it's not practicable. And in terms of work, the workplace, you know, maybe one man's equality and lack of discrimination is another man's discrimination. Because I know of people who feel alienated from this council and discriminated against by this council because of its very overt use of the Gaelic language. So, you know, it's a very, very difficult subject to look at objectively. There's always going to be a degree of subjectivity from your own practical experience of life and your own perception of your nationality, whether you be British or Irish or whatever. So I'm just concerned about that. And also I'm concerned that there is double standards at work here, because not that long ago I had a Facebook post up during the storm. And it was a very inoffensive thing where I put up a Union Jack in the storm and made a comment. It was on a private mode I made this to my own friends. Unfortunately, somebody sent this to a Sinn Féin councillor. That Sinn Féin councillor posted it on his page. And the comments that were made against my person were frightening. I mean frightening. People making comments about this boy mightn't have much longer here and get them back to England. Me go back to England. My name's Riley. I'm an O'Rockley. I'm one of the true Irish. But because I don't conform to a certain strain of Irishness, that because I'm proud of my Britishness as a citizen of this United Kingdom and the British Isles, you know, you're somehow subject to really derogatory comments. I think Sinn Féin need to look at themselves and how they actually manage their affairs on a day-to-day basis, because that was a very, very frightening event for my family. and you know, many of them are, they're not even over it yet. So I think everybody needs to look at themselves, and platitudes and virtue signaling, that's what this comes over as to me. It's not real life. Thank you, John. So I couldn't support it.
I'm just Kian Taylor. Not aware of any O's out there. Chair, I suppose I have similar concerns to Henry in this, in terms of the wording of the language and of the motion. It's the intent of the motion. I think everyone should aspire to a society free from sectarianism, discrimination, intimidation, and threat of attack and attack. But I think the problem is that it seems to be all singing, all dancing, and it's open to all sorts of interpretation. And I think, Councillor Clark, maybe you need to maybe look at it again, and it needs to be more straightforward. Again, even in this chamber, there's sectarianism happens on a monthly and a daily basis. And I think we as party members and party representatives should take a look at ourselves at times and how we approach things. But it certainly, I have problems with the wording of the motion, I may as well be honest with you. And at this stage, I would have difficulty supporting it. I just think it's open to all sorts of interpretation, and it's great aspiration, but in reality, I don't think it's practical. So at this stage, you know, I don't see how I can support it.
Okay,
Chair, as an SDLP representative and member of a party that has taken a lead for many years on the equality issue, and indeed taken the lead on tolerance across the North, me and my colleagues are happy to support this motion in its content and sentiment. However, Chair, I do find it somewhat ironic that it comes from one of the lead parties in what is now the defunct government, given the week that it's in it. A week where the promise and hope of the Good Friday Agreement offered to all our people has been squandered. Both the DUP and Sinn Féin have failed to reach agreement and show real leadership to our people. Instead, they've created a pathway to direct rule and handed the power to implement the scourge universal credit and the cuts to our health and education budget to the Tories in Westminster. Sectarian attacks that were referred to in this motion are manifest of the one for you, one for me, put party interest first approach to power sharing that both these parties have shown over the last decade. The reality is that our society is now more polarised now than at any time since the signing of the Good Friday Agreement. The divisive politics at government level has led to division and sectarianism in our community. Since 2012, and the Housing Executive have confirmed us this week, there have been over 2,000 sectarian attacks on homes across the North. More than 2,000. That's more than one every day over the last 5 years. That's the legacy of a decade of the divisive DUP and Sinn Féin government that we've had for the last 10 years. Society here can only heal when real political leadership is shown and real leaders take risks for peace and create a stable, normal society. Chair, in conclusion, I would urge the party proposing and their partners in government, DUP, to get back around the table and for the first time in quite a while include the other parties who have demonstrated an ability to show tolerance around the table to work to make power sharing work so that we can set an example for our people to follow and to create a society free from intimidation and sectarian attacks. If we show the lead politically, people will follow. Thanks, Chair.
Councillor McMurray.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be supporting this motion. I mean, anything that is tackling sectarianism can only be taken at face value, and that's something that I will support. But I suppose I have to ask, I mean, I'm going to probably echo sentiments that have been made throughout the chamber here, but I'm going to take ownership of them all. You know, have I always been free from sectarianism? Have I always been free from homophobia? Have I always been free from misogynistic remarks? I'm not sure I can possibly say I have. But how we try to overcome this, how we lower our barriers, how we lower our actions, how we gain our understanding, that's what's the key to this. And also we do have to take into consideration what our words say and what words we tolerate and how this then leads to actions from those that aren't in this chamber. So we all have to take ownership of this, and And I think that's something to be very conscious of. And then we've all demonstrated here already hurt from what has been said by other parties. We've all demonstrated resentment from other parties. But we have to take on the fact that maybe we caused that hurt. We're not free from causing that resentment. So it's only whenever we can maybe acknowledge that and embrace the other rather than just tolerate the other that then we'll maybe move forward more coherently. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Okay, Councillor Park, do you want to sum up?
Yeah, Chair, just very briefly. I'm not sure where to start telling the truth. I think the motion is very straightforward. You know, you're against sectarianism, attacks, discrimination, intimidation. I think it's very, very, very clear what we're trying to achieve with the motion. And I deliberately didn't want to get into discussions in around party politics because it would end up in a sectarian debate. It was hurt has been caused in all sides. And there's a lot of healing still has to be undertaken by society in general, but we are the political leaders, and as political leaders we need to bring back this message into our communities. If we go against this type of motion, you're doing a disservice to your communities, and of course the people on the ground then are taking your words and your commentary that it is dangerous for the community not to end sectarianism, not to condemn intimidation and attack because of someone's religion. And as Councillor Enright said again, or their ethnic backgrounds, you know, if that's what you're saying, that you can't sign up to, you know, basic rights for people, then I think there's something seriously wrong with but I'm not going to, as I say, I'm not going to get into you know, that sort of petty party politics. And in regards to the motion itself, and Councillor Hannah mentioned about he could support some of it. Again, I'm not sure what the number of bullet points underneath where he said he could support till the threats of violence. What is the difficulty in the rest of the stuff? Because that's basically what you've signed up for in the Good Friday Agreement. That's basically what you signed up for when the DUP entered Stormont, was these sort of ground rules was what was agreed. And as I say, I don't see how it causes difficulty in regards to the duty to report or challenge sectarian speech, attack, intimidation, or other discrimination when witnessed or heard. I don't see how that would cause you difficulty. So I'm at a loss to see that. I think you're reading it wrong. And you're sort of tying in some rewriting of the Good Friday Agreement with the bullet points underneath. So I just think you're reading it in the wrong context. And in regards to Councillor Savage, again, that's a bit of point scoring. You know, it's Sinn Féin, the DUP's fault. Sinn Féin and the DUP worked tirelessly to make the institutions work, and I'm not getting into the difficulties that we arrived at. It's, you know, it's well publicised. We know what happened, but at the end of the day, there's no point in going into power sharing at any price. And I still wait to hear what the SDLP would drop in regards to quality issues, because to go at any price, you're going to end up doing a disservice to some minority. And some of the sticking points that Sinn Féin have been involved in is in regards to a Bill of Rights. A Bill of Rights doesn't hurt anybody. Equality doesn't hurt anybody. But there are the rights that there's difficulties, and I can hear it in the chamber. You know, this is a reflection almost of what's happening probably at the talks. And the DUP and the unionist parties in general are finding it difficult for equality for all citizens, regardless of your sexual but as I say, what is the difficulty with the Bill of Rights? And
OK,
I got the floor.
Just summing up, and we'll take a vote on it.
And summing up, I don't see anything in the motion that needs to be changed. I think it's quite clear, and I'm not going to be changing the motion. In regards to Councillor Enright's point, and I appreciate his positive comments, but I don't think we should write to the Chief Constable in regards to something that happened in Cantrell Close, Belfast, because it's outside our jurisdiction as a council. I'm just using that as an example of the positive statement by the six main party leaders in regards to the pledging their support for the citizens who lived in that area and condemning the intimidation. But disappointed by some of the remarks.
Okay, councillors, clearly not everyone is in favour of the motion, so we need to take a vote. So could we do that? And then I want to refer to Liam. Sorry? Yes.
Chairman, having looked at the Stanton orders in relation to a motion, and where a motion the motion is relevant for consideration, in regard to the citizens of the district. But as I said, the chairperson, I'm happy to take a legal advice following the motion to look at the values of the motion. I'll do that after the motion has been approved, Chairman, or if the motion is approved, Chair, I should say.
Can I request a recorded vote?
Okay, record a vote, and then should it be passed, Liam will seek legal advice. Okay.
Okay, Chairman, the motion was proposed by Councillor Clark, seconded by Councillor Doran. Starting off with Councillor Andrews, Councillor Bailey absent, Councillor Brown absent, Councillor Burgess absent, Councillor Burns absent, Councillor Byrne. Councillor Carr absent, Councillor Casey. Councillor Clark.
Four.
Councillor Craig. Councillor Curran absent. Councillor Devlin. Councillor Dorn. Councillor Enright. Councillor Fitzpatrick. Councillor Hannah. Councillor Hart absent, sorry. Councillor Harvey. Councillor Hardy. Councillor Hyland. Councillor Kimmins. Councillor Larkin. Councillor Akron absent. Councillor McCauley absent, sorry. Councillor McAteer. Councillor McMahon. Councillor McMurray. Councillor Mulgrew. Councillor Murnan. Councillor Gribben absent. Councillor Murray. Councillor Quinn. Councillor Riley. Councillor Ruan, Councillor Savage, Councillor Stravin absent, Councillor Stokes, Councillor Taylor, Councillor Tinley absent, Councillor Trainer, Councillor Walker.
Twenty-two, one against.
Okay, so the motion has been passed, and we'll get clarity from the legal services. Liam will gather that for us. Okay, we move on to item 13, which is the notice of motion received from Councillors Merlin Quinn and Brown, who Councillor Brown's not here. Mark, do you want to read the motion, please?
Yeah, thank you. This council recognises the invaluable contribution of community transport, community groups, voluntary sector organisations and charities that operate transport under Section 10B permits to the citizens of Newry, Mourne and Down Council. Consultations issued by the Department of Infrastructure regarding changes to driver licensing requirements and the use of Section 10B permits puts transport in Newry, Mourne and Down under threat. These proposed changes are being undertaken without an impact assessment of the effects and of the proposed changes and without contingency plans or resources being put in place to ensure transport for older people, disabled and the most vulnerable in society continues after the 1st of January 2018. This Council calls upon the Department of Infrastructure to suspend this consultation process until such times that the Department can demonstrate that proper provision has been put in place to ensure citizens of Newry, Mourne and Down Council continue to receive transport provision that best meets their needs. Do you want me to continue now?
Yes, go ahead. Well, have we got a seconder for the motion? Councillor Quinn, your second, so just continue on then, Councillor Martin.
The Living Well Together Community Plan for Newry Morne and Down identifies the importance of the availability of accessible and affordable transport for individuals and groups to access public and community services, particularly in predominantly rural areas. Each of the local action plans in Newry Morne and Down 7 DAs highlights the need to build on existing public, private and community transport services to meet the mobility needs of people in an ageing society and to address inequalities in access to transport, especially for those disadvantaged by low income, disability, rural location and often a combination of these. For a wee bit of clarity for the members, a Section 10B permit provides exemption from the requirement to hold an operator licence. He's okay there, boys?
Henry, thank you.
Where the service provided for education, religion, social welfare or any activity which benefits the community on a non-profit basis. And this is a bit that Henry might want to listen to. European law states that operators need to be non-commercial, meaning they cannot charge anything more than a minimal amount for their service. To give you a bit of background on the use that it gets, from October 16 to September, Newry Morne Community Transport provided over 20,000 demands for data lift for individual members, 32,500 group hire trips for group members, 215 volunteer social car scheme for trips to hospital appointments, and 2,900 disability action trips in urban areas. Down Community Transport currently has 13 drivers, 9 contracted and 4 casual drivers. 4 of the contract drivers meet the proposed new licence requirements and 5 drivers are going through the process at the moment but will not be completed by the 1st of January 2018. But the 4 casual drivers cannot be put through the process due to the cost. At the Newry end, they're actually going to lose 2 drivers on it. So if they remove the 10B section of it, the community transport people are not against the changes to the driver licensing side of it. Any enhancement of training that there is for the drivers is welcomed. It's just the time scale that has been put down in place and the lack of resource made available to facilitate this. There is no staff within the department to allow, which is leading to delays on people being able to take each stage. There's 4 stages in getting a new licence, and you have to complete one stage before you can even book your second stage, and there's at least a 4-week wait time to book your second stage. But if they go into the 10B permit and they want to remove that, the service has to stop immediately. And there'd be a pressure to move them to an operator's license, which would intrinsically change the service, as we could no longer hold a grant, being a commercial operation. They would then go into the realms of competing with commercial operators. So tender for services mean a real reduction in service, especially for those most isolated, as they become having to make money to actually make a service. It means that the people who are going to lose are the ones who are at the extremes, the ones that's going to take the most time to actually provide the service to. I suppose the key issues for this, the processes aren't in place to facilitate the necessary paperwork and applications in a timely manner. Grandfather rights have not been given to experienced drivers. So where a number of the drivers have been driving for 30, 40 years, that's not going to count. They should not have to reset driving tests. They can just go straight into doing their CPDs and continue as they are now. And funding to cover the additional cost, approximately £1,000 per driver, is not going to be granted. Where in England, where they're introducing similar proposals, they're going to fund the training of these drivers. This isn't just going to impact on community transport, as in the 2 groups we have in our area. School staff, teachers, who are in paid employment, will now have to have a D1 license to drive a school minibus. Church wardens or anyone that's in a paid position and is driving a minibus as part of that paid position, they're going to have these licenses. So it impacts on quite a few groupings across the area. So I move the motion to.
Okay,
Councillor Quinn. Yes, thank you, Chair. In citing this motion, I just wanted to highlight a few other points. The department have said that the reason for changing to this licence is on safety grounds, but they cannot demonstrate a bad safety record for community transport operators, either in Northern Ireland or in the UK. The removal of the 10B panel reduced the service to the rural community groups, disabled, elderly and youth. This is also affecting a lot of the council work. We're promoting positive health, healthy eating. These people will not be able to access shopping, health appointments, medical appointments because of the reduction of the service. Also, community transports, year on year for the past 3 years, have had their funding cut by 10% each year. They just cannot go on. And these other changes and costs that are being imposed on them are just leaving them that will no longer be viable businesses. And our rural communities will suffer. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Quinn. Councillor Riley?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This one is really baffling for me. Because if you look back to 1967, the old Stormont government, they just transferred the GB Transport Act. And because of the unique circumstances within the UK, where you had such a voluntary sector that relied on minibuses, whenever it came to the implementing of EU 2012-36, and even before that, EU 91439, the UK put up very, very sound reasons to get an exemption from that, because they said that, you know, people say, what is the British way of life you go on about? This is quintessentially the British way of life, where people will volunteer for community groups, for churches, for football clubs, to ferry them about. And the UK government got that exemption from the EU. So the thing that just baffled me now, after these number of years, when we're about to leave, why is the UK government trying to impose this? It is absolutely crazy. And it will really, you know, the people talk about social cohesion. What more adds to social cohesion and voluntary service than being able to do this type of thing? And I've done Google searches and Yahoo searches and whatever about minibuses being involved in accidents, and there's virtually none. The people who were recently killed in a minibus in England were actually killed by a drunk HGV driver, allegedly drunk, I have to point that out, this case is still there. But there's no cases where a Gaelic football club or a GB company or a boys brigade or Girl Scouts, where somebody involved in those clubs took a minibus out and wrecked it and killed a load of people. That's never happened. So why is there this need now to implement this when we're meant to be leaving in 2019? It just doesn't add up. And I think we should be, I know that we have to do it when GB does it, because the insurance companies insist on that there's standardisation throughout the UK, but I'm just very, very at a loss. Why now? Why now, Madam Chair? I wish somebody could answer. And there's no way out of it. They'll impose it once it's an EU law, once they start that implementation. If we don't do it, they'll face massive fines from the European Union, even though we're leaving in 2019, or meant to be.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Harvey.
Thank you, Chair.
God, with Henry frozen on the screen.
He's frozen.
Okay.
All right. While I support this motion,
because it asks the DEFI suspend the process until proper provision has been put in place before the 10B revisions are made regarding D1 licences. There are too many people dependent on their transport, but I must emphasise that passenger safety is paramount. And the revisions are in line with EU directive, and that a minibus driver without a D1 licence and a DQC certificate, which is a driver qualification card, cannot drive in another EU member state. So I wasn't able to tie down, well, that's England or the Republic, but it does sound a bit complicated. But again, as I say, I'm happy to support the motion, but again, I mean, it is a good thing because safety is paramount. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Harvey, thank you.
Councillor
O'Murray.
Yeah, just a couple of comments on behalf of our group on the motion. Rural transport provides a crucial service in South Armagh as well. And bringing those who would be otherwise isolated to medical appointments, shopping and to social life. In Cross and Glen and the surrounding area, for example, many rural dwellers, elderly and disabled, are totally reliant on community transport to the Rainbow Club and the luncheon clubs, like many others in South Armagh. And the prospect of this being cut back in any way at all, with licences or any other way, would lead to many of these people being totally isolated. I just checked on the website there. There was an update from the Department of Infrastructure today to say that there was a small extension on the consultation process until Friday the 8th of December, and that the Department of Infrastructure would work with all stakeholders and anyone interested in updating their licence and that. But, we'll support the motion. Just on Henry's comments about it being a British way of life to volunteer, like, that's crazy stuff. I know many volunteers who didn't prescribe a British way of life. within the GAA circle, within primary schools, it's just. I always clarify, do I? Yeah, so we're just, we'll be happy to support the motion.
Councillor Murray, Councillor Taylor,
non-Councillors
with another motion after this.
Councillor
Taylor.
Thank you, Chair. I think most of what needs to be said has been said. I certainly have no hesitation in supporting the proposal, and I thank Councillor Murnan and Councillor Quinn for bringing forward the motion to Council tonight. I know that my own party has expressed concerns about the proposed changes to the driving licensing requirements. And, I certainly know locally there'll be quite a few groups, church groups, sporting groups, other types of community groups that will be affected by any change in the requirements. So, I'm happy to support the proposal, and I certainly hope that everyone in the room can do likewise.
Okay, it looks as though we have broad consensus. Councillor Murnan, do you want to sum up and then we can move forward?
Yeah, thanks. There was just one point that maybe didn't hit on with when David talks about the churches and community groups and stuff like that. There's a lack of knowledge out there. I came across one group today that operated a minibus, and they have no knowledge of this change. So it shows that it seems to be a shambles. Henry talked about where it's coming from. Minister Durkin said it wouldn't happen. Minister Hazard said he never signed it off. So it just seems to be.
Would ask if community transport or all these organisations be given the time and the financial support to implement the changes in the driving licences, and that not only do we fulfil respond to the consultation, but we actually write to Peter May as well and voice our concerns directly to him.
Councillors, am I right in saying that there's full consensus that we have nobody opposed that? Okay. We'll move on then to item 14, which is the notice of motion received from Councillor Devlin.
Thank you very much, Chair. I appreciate we are getting late in the evening, so if we're happy enough to take the motion as read, I can just get into the content of it? Okay.
Yeah, you have to read it.
You have to, okay. This council notes the well-documented and evident hardship caused in England, Scotland and Wales by the rollout of universal credit. This council calls for an immediate halt to the rollout of universal credit across the north to protect the most vulnerable and the disadvantaged from poverty, rent arrears, homelessness, and commits to writing to party leaders, calling on them to work together to deliver a system that is fair, practical and compassionate. So maybe Chair can start off by giving a wee bit of background to universal credit. It's being introduced across the north on a phased basis. It's a single means tested benefit that will replace Job Seekers Alliance, Income Support, ASA, Housing Benefit and Tax Credit. Applications need to be made online and cannot be done by anyone else. I've been assisting people for probably the last 17 years, however, universal with benefits and universal credit in England has been an absolute disaster and has seen a 17% increase in referrals to food banks. It has forced working families further into poverty and into the clutches of loan sharks, so its introduction here has left me fearing for the worst. By way of context, 30,000 families across the north will be affected by these changes. So universal credit is likely to deepen hardship for many of these 30,000 families. I mean, that figure is shocking. And that will be particularly challenging for those who don't have access to broadband or have no IT skills, never mind those who can't drive or are in mental ill health. Sanctions will be issued to claimants who don't adhere to the new rules. These financial sanctions can see benefit cut or totally removed for a period between 2 weeks and 18 months. Again, daunting and alarming statistics. I do want to see a situation whereby people are better off in work, but support must be given to those who have very real disabilities and can't work, whether they're physical or mental health reasons. Plunging people into debt doesn't incentivise people to work. Forcing people to choose between food and heat doesn't incentivise work. And evicting people from their homes doesn't incentivise work. As a society, should we stand by and allow this to happen? I feel that society is judged on how we look after our most vulnerable, and in that respect, this continued decision is nothing short of shameful. I do now feel that most political parties now recognise the snowballing flaws with universal credit and the very serious impact that it's having on those struggling to make ends meet. I mean, we have a number of independent sources right across the north who deliver advice on a daily basis, and they have stated publicly that the rollout of universal credit must be halted, and I think it's imperative that these calls are listened to. Food banks and homelessness are prevalent in towns throughout the north, and it's only set to worsen. We are really fortunate in Newcastle to have the Pantry Food Bank, but surely though we should be working towards a situation where we're actually removing the need for food banks at all. And I think really this issue demands the restoration of our power-sharing institutions, and all parties must work together to deliver a system that is fair, practical and compassionate. And I think it is time that we put the brakes on universal credit. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Andrews, you have indicated that are you seconding the
motion? Yes, indeed. With your indulgence, yes. I'm seconding the motion. You know, points have been raised by my colleague and paints very much a very gloomy picture of what benefits, of what benefit recipients, the vulnerable and disadvantaged in our society are going to be subjected to. Poverty, rent arrears, prospects of getting kicked out on the streets through homelessness, etc., and all going to be subjected to draconian measures with universal credit, you know. And already signposted this obstacle course is that, for example, playing online, how could you expect somebody who is seriously ill to get out of a sick bed to go to the computer terminal and apply online? And also in recent times, we had the travesty of claimants being charged 55 pence per minute on a phone line. It was good to see Mother Christmas, the Prime Minister, waiving that phone charge, and hopefully she can waive a whole lot to a lot more. You know, the authors of this benefit, they see it as a magic wand to take away benefits. It's like a rich man's Robin Hood. They rob the poor and the sick and throw it to the rich. You know, what typical can you expect of a Tory government? And replace it with a so-called one-stop benefit that'll do everybody, like Marie Antoinette, let the peasants eat cake. As a councillor, I work alongside many claimants who contact me for help. And it's very sad and very distressing to see so many in our society who are puzzled by finding their way around a maze of a so-called form for PIPs, personal independence payment schemes, so I mean. And it definitely is like an obstacle course framed with questions that are loaded in favour of the agency, not the poor critter that's applying for it. and also the ordeal of appearing before tribunals, worried, sick, worked up, and people crying, you know. And also in relation that the agencies depend so much on these so-called qualified health assessors, you know, and I think it's not fair. But as Laura said in her statement, we do have a duty of care, and we have a duty, a moral duty, to stand up for those people in our society today who are less well off health-wise, physically, etc., than what we are. And I remember years ago there was a song that was out, "Things Can Only Get Better," but with universal credit, I'm sorry, a universal calamity that's coming down the lane, things are just only going to get worse. You know, food banks are on the rise. We've seen deprivation, more so in recent times, on the rise. We see queues of people to the sick tribunals on the rise, a queue of misery and hardship. And more or less, the clock's turning back to what it was like 100 years ago. You know, the people being subjected probably to the soup kitchens, which will probably emerge in the not too distant future. But again, we could go on forever and a day, but it is a motion that I would like to second, and hopefully the council will take on board the spirit in which it has been tabled. Thank you very much, everybody.
Councillor Craig.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, I agree with the spirit of the motion. And certainly we would seek to get people out of the poverty cycle and those that are suffering hardship through being out of work. And I am convinced there is a need to reward people for working. And if people take on more work, even say another part-time job, it has to pay them to work rather than them seeing any disadvantage in doing that. So there is a need to get people out of the poverty cycle and to have a good start in life, etc. Now, however, I have to say this, that I believe that the one payment system to replace six means tested benefits seems a good idea. The problem I know is that there needs to be adjustment upwards of the universal credit work allowances. And this is why it would be good to have an assembly back. I think we need to look at that. And there is a slightly bespoke system for Northern Ireland where housing benefits paid directly to householders. However, I agree with the spirit of the motion. I don't agree that it should be scrapped entirely. I think there needs to be some modification of it. So for this motion, Chair, I will be abstaining.
Councillor
Kimmins. Thanks, Chair. Just that our party will be supporting the motion. I think it's clear from all the speakers previously that the concerns are there. I know even just from family in England and that as well, that the problems that they're having, and with TIP, etc. I don't think there's one person in here who hasn't a family, a relative, friend, or as many of us have constituents here who are already feeling the impact of this characteristic of Tory austerity, so we will be fully supportive of the motion.
Thank you, Councillor McMurray.
Yeah, thank you. The Alliance will be supporting the motion as well. I mean, just to develop a few points, this quoted six week minimum wait. I mean, it's a minimum wait that's imposed. It's not and your application has fallen through the cracks in the system. You're the one in three, unfortunately. But this has been imposed as a political device. And, you know, we're told to remember we're all in this together. But again, we're often reminded of how the clips this evening, we're all in this together unless you're able to avail of the multi-millionaires availing of offshore tax accounts and tax loopholes. And HMRC was prevented from claiming £5.8 billion in tax. It sort of fits a bit of a context really in what we're dealing with here. And that leads on to who does it suit. Well, it suits the Tories. It travels all around for the Chancellor. He's saving £100 million annually in the budget by cutting disability benefits to children. Take Garth's point about incentivising people to work, but you know, if you look at the income rate of income tax over £150,000, it's 45%. It's 45p in the pound. And yet, some of the claimants will be losing at a benefit rate of 63p in the pound. So, I mean, it's hardly proportion, it's hardly fair, it seems to me. And you know what, you're quite right. So some people, not everyone's going to be worse off as a result of this. Although that said, 52% of claimants in East Lothian
were lost £44.72 a week. 31% did increase an increase, or it did receive an increase, and that was an increase of 34 pence a week. So again, it's big cuts all over. Why is it a shambles? Why is it so unfair? Well, I think it's quite obvious. It's because it affects the people who are poor. It affects people that are underqualified, undereducated, and unlistened to. Society makes infants of them, makes decisions for them, not with them, as can often be the case. Solutions are imposed before any degree of empathy or understanding of both sides has been explored. And listening around, I would tentatively suggest that one of the many things that probably unites even the most diametrically opposed people in here isn't the denomination or ideology, but it's quite possibly the fact that they donate to food banks, and they will need to keep donating to food banks. Where it's rolled out, usage goes up by 16%. So, you know, it's wonderful that we can unite in actions to help the poor, but it'd be great if we could unite in actions to the wider society.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Chair. I won't be supporting the motion, Chair, but I certainly won't vote against it either. I have to say that I abstain, and the reason for that is that my party has called for the rollout of universal credit to be delayed, because I do recognise that there is major flaws associated with the project. But we also believe that welfare reform is necessary to ensure the benefits are provided to those who are entitled to receive such support. But we do believe that there is a need for a fair system to be developed, which ensures that support is offered to those who are most in need, as well as supporting others who want to get back into the work environment. Concerns have been raised about the rollout of universal credit across the United Kingdom, including here in Northern Ireland, and it is vital that those difficulties are resolved to prevent claimants from being plunged further into poverty. And the public should have confidence in the system, and that does not appear to be the case at present. The All Students Party believes that the government should address those concerns that have been highlighted about the effectiveness of the system, but certainly at this stage we wouldn't be calling for it to be scrapped, as was suggested in the motion. I also want to welcome the recent government announcement that they are going to scrap the charge of 55p a minute to call the Universal Credit Helpline. This was extremely unfair and unwarranted in the first instance, and it's welcome that they have retracted their decision to move forward with this in the first instance. I also have a bit of a concern about the terminology, the word north. You know, it's something that annoys me quite regularly here, that we hear this constant reference to the north. You know, it's Northern Ireland. That's the definition of our country, it's Northern Ireland. And I have a concern that wasn't used in this. You know, I don't feel that it was any necessary to use the word north. I thought that was actually another flaw in the motion that needed to be highlighted. But say, I won't vote against it, but I've made a decision at this stage that I will abstain. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Councillor, would you like just to sum up, Councillor Devlin, and then we'll have to take a vote on it?
Thank you, Chair. I suppose I want to thank each and every councillor who has spoke, and how I do value their contribution. It's clear that it is a pretty emotive issue, but just to pick up on a couple of points that we've made, like Councillor Craig, I do agree with streamlining the benefit system and rewarding people who do work, but this is a drastic change and really is just nuts. That's the only way you can describe it as. We can't have sane people in our society in these such drastic situations. And let me pick up on Councillor Taylor's point. You know, I want people working and rewarded for that. But and also in terms of actually tweaking the legislation, the place to do that is before the Assembly, where legislation is brought forward, is drafted, is tabled, people put forward amendments. That's the way normal legislation is drafted and is dealt with, and that's something that I would like to see back again. And in terms, Councillor Taylor, from me using my wording of the North, I think that's my favourite in terms of my motion, but I appreciate your point. I appreciate your point. But in terms of the rest of the comments here this evening, I would particularly like to welcome the comments from my Sinn Féin Council colleagues, and really appreciate that now at long last you've come on board the SDLP's way of thinking. We in the SDLP have been consistent in protecting. Sorry, Chair. We in the SDLP have been persistent in protecting the rights of disadvantaged. Any person or party can traipse around the countryside and they can erect posters with how they're standing up to the Tories, how they are going to, you know, stop the cuts. We've seen them all right across the district. It's just a crying shame that when the time came and Sinn Féin had the opportunity to really stand up and protect the vulnerable in our community, they decided not to do it. Sinn Féin, the DUCP, decided that a Tory government was best placed to legislate for welfare here in the north. Sinn Féin and the DUP together, the cosy team, thought that those with physical and mental disabilities would be looked after and protected by a Conservative administration. How wrong were you all? No amount of political spin will help the people you abandoned, and that's exactly what you have done. You've let down and abandoned the very same people you pretend to protect. When in autumn 2015 you signed a legislative consent motion handing all welfare powers to Westminster. Let me make it very clear, I don't actually blame the Tories. I blame the two parties, Sinn Féin and the DUP as a team. You both give the Tories the tools and the power to destroy the social fabric of our community, and shame on you all. Either you didn't know and didn't care, or you were so politically naive that the wool has been pulled right over your eyes. And either way, it's the vulnerable who will ultimately pay the price. And perhaps to pick up a point that Councillor Ryan mentioned there in terms of the mandate, we constantly hear this battering on of a people's mandate. I just really wish that whenever the chips were down, you used your mandate for something decent. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, we'll have to go to a vote.
Opposed to Councillor.
Remind you that we have to go into
just,
committee.
Just for the record, Chairman, just to say it's 22 for, 4 abstentions and none against.
Okay. At the start of the meeting, when we were going through the ERT committee meetings, yeah, I just need to ask anybody, members of the public, to step out. At the start of ERT, Councillor Hannah raised an item which we need to go into committee for. So the item is deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of schedule 6 of the Local Government Act Northern Ireland 2014, information relating to the financial and business affairs of any persons, including the council holding that information, and the public may be by resolution excluded from this item of business. Councillor Hannah, would you like to put your question again to Marie, just for clarity? Or sorry, proposal and seconder to go into committee?
Councillor Hannah, opposed.
Right. And Councillor Hannah, do you want to put your question?
Do this from the committee now, Chairman. While we were in committee, proposed by Councillor. On a proposal.
Okay. So we just need a proposer and a second.
No, it's on a proposer, Councillor Rowan, second by Councillor Hardy, at their recommendations from the committee.
Okay, so we are, if you go back to your ERT, I don't even know what page it was on. It was on page 33 in. The ERT committee, item 191-2017. Can we have a proposer and seconder for the Camden Lake land related matters? Proposed by Councillor Rand, seconded by Councillor Hershey.
To agree the recommendation in the report.
Everybody happy?
Yeah.
Okay, and that is the meeting concluded. Thank you.